In episode 138 with Duncan Bascarin Brown, learn how to quit drinking and embrace joy, better relationships, and a productive life.
And I mean, when you talk about young people, I think that's the area we really need to work hardest on. And, you know, it, like, doing a little bit of input in schools, like, it helps and everything, but it's nowhere near enough. We need to change the entire focus of the way we do things. So when my daughter was a lot younger, she got invited to a friend's birthday party. And as I was dropping her off, the mum said, "Oh, you can leave her, or you can come in and have a glass of champagne. All the grown-ups are having a nice glass of champagne." And it's like, yeah, great. So what are we actually teaching our children here? You know, if you want to be grown up, the way to be grown up and the way to celebrate as a grown up is by drinking alcohol. That's effectively what you're teaching them at, they were like 3 or 4. You know, it's like, it's ridiculous. We need to sort of show people that there is another way. We need to show young people that you actually can enjoy yourself.
Welcome to another episode of Healing Through Love. Each week, we share ideas, experiences, and resources to increase the awareness of domestic and family violence and to empower survivors to grow and thrive. We talk with experts who share their advice, or with people who have experienced abuse, no matter where they are on their journey. This is all about healing through love. And now, here are your hosts, Charlene Lynch and Rose Davidson.
Hello and welcome to the Healing Through Love podcast, a space where stories of strength and resilience and transformation unfold. I'm your host, Charlene Lynch, and I'm honoured to be your guide on this journey of empowerment and healing. Today we have a very special episode that's tailored just for you. Whether you're driving, sipping a cup of tea, or simply taking a moment to yourself, I want you to know that you're in a safe place. Healing Through Love is more than a podcast. It's a community, a beacon of hope, a reminder that you are not alone. In this episode, we have a guest, a very special guest, who's going to share a story that resonates at the core of our mission, a story that illuminates the power of love, resilience, and unwavering strength that lies within each and every one of us. So settle in, take a deep breath, and let the healing begin. But before we dive into today's inspiring narrative, a quick reminder that if you find value in our episode, please consider supporting us by subscribing and sharing and leaving a review. Your engagement helps us reach the hearts and spread the message of healing at the speed of love. Today, we've got a very special guest with us, and I'm excited to introduce to you Duncan. Now, he has got a story to tell, and it's all in and around alcohol. For many of your listeners know that I was an alcoholic for more than 30 years. So it's a subject that I love to dive in and have a chat about. Now, today we're going to talk about in and around alcohol. So, and he's also the writer of several books. So Duncan, can you please explain to me, how did you get where you are? And tell me a little bit about your first book.
Oh, okay. So yeah, how did I get where I am? Well, I was born in... Oh, you on the condensed version. Right. Okay. So I think I'm, you know, like many, many people, I was a bit nervous and unsure of myself when I was a teenager. You know, I didn't want to dance. I was too nervous to dance. And then somebody handed me a can of lager. And well, it felt like all my Christmases came at once. I went straight inside the party. I danced. I ended up kissing the girl from Form F. And, you know, the rest is history. Well, actually, I suppose it's not all history, is it? I started off drinking and it was very social. It was always with other people. It was always at social events. But as time went on, the amount I drank went up and up and up and up. And the amount of people I drank with went down and down and down and down. And I took it to its logical conclusion. And I was just sat on my own drinking a couple of bottles of wine every night. And I was miserable, and, you know, I wasn't living. Actually, you could just end that sentence there. I was going to say I wasn't living the life I should have been living, but, you know, I wasn't even living. It was, it was no fun at all. And one or two things, including my gorgeous and very sensitive and gentle wife, kind of pointed me in the right direction. I got myself out the other side about 9.5 years ago. Not that it's a competition. I'm not trying to outdo you by 6 months or anything. It's just, you know, that's the way of it. And ever since then, I kind of wanted to share that, you know, that joy, that freedom, that peace, that confidence, that focus, the energy that I got from stopping drinking. I just want to share that with everybody. So that took me into kind of coaching and therapeutic work. And then, you know, I've always enjoyed writing. So, two books of free therapy later. And my latest book's called Real Men Quit. That's my attempt to actually help men who famously are not necessarily very good at help asking for help. This they can just get on Amazon without having to talk to anybody.
I love it. It's such a writing a book is very cathartic. Okay, let's talk about the subjects we don't normally talk about, both as survivors, yeah, is the manipulation that we create when we're drinkers to make sure that we've still got some alcohol. And maybe our listeners, you know, you might be in this space right now, or the people in your proximity might be. This manipulative behavior to make sure you've still got a belly full of alcohol. And for me, it was about making sure that I wasn't the person driving. So, you know, inviting people to parties just basically so I could get a lift home. Like, when I look at it, I don't know, is it just me, Duncan, or did you find yourself doing some behaviors that really weren't at the core of your values when you were drinking?
Yeah. I mean, I think that's kind of what I was getting at, I suppose, when I said I wasn't living the life I should have been living. You know, I wasn't doing the kind of things that I am capable of, and, you know, maybe I was put here to do, but, you know, I just wasn't behaving in a way that was true and honest to who I was. You know, I see this all of the time, and I see it a lot with people who smoke as well. And it's almost worse, because it kind of doesn't seem quite so bad. It doesn't seem quite so big, just because you sort of, you know, like my wife would say, oh, let's go to the cinema, Duncan. I really want to see that film. And I'd be like, no, obviously we're not going to the cinema. No way I can sit in the cinema for 3 hours without having a cigarette, you know, so we just stay at home and watch TV. On a wider point, I suppose, if we'd gone somewhere and it had got to about 9:30 and I thought we should have left by then and we hadn't left by then I would start getting annoyed, and I'd start be trying to find ways to leave, because, you know, the shop around the corner closed at 10. So if I didn't get home in time, I wouldn't be able to buy a couple of bottles of wine, and then I wouldn't be happy, would I? So, yeah, I mean, for me, it wasn't like massive, massive things, but it was just like, every day there was always something. There was always something that I was just trying to kind of bend round, not to my way of thinking, but just bend it round so that I could drink and smoke and eat fried chicken without having to worry too much. I mean, obviously, you know, that did cause its own sort of worry. But yeah, no, absolutely. I would definitely manipulate events to make sure that, you know, I'd get to drink, I'd get to smoke, I'd get to do what I wanted to do, which is, of course, ironically, not what I wanted to do.
Yeah, and it's a strange thing. The reasons why we start drinking don't necessarily end up being the reasons why we continue drinking. So if you, listeners, if you, you know, subscribe to the theory that each addiction is attached to a different frequency, the frequency for alcohol is depression. So, and stupidly enough, alcohol is a depressant. So the one thing when you're a depressed person that you shouldn't be doing is drinking alcohol, and it's the one thing you do. It doesn't make any sense when you stand back and have a look at it. And look, interestingly, cigarette smoking, the frequency is anger. So, like, yeah, I know I was an angry person who was depressed, but I'm better now. I'm sort of recovered almost. I love it. So... Yeah. I love this process of unpacking how you got from where you were to where you are now, and this beautiful journey of writing the book. So it started off with the first book, which was Get...
So, well, technically I wrote a couple of books about local government, but they're pretty boring, so let's not talk
about
those.
Let's just gloss
over that. Yeah, no, let's pretend that my first book was really Get Over Indulgence, which it's kind of my journey. I like to sort of tell people it's just this sort of like general little story about how I went from drinking, smoking, eating junk food to energy, peace, happiness, freedom, self-respect, all of the good stuff, really. I don't like to kind of make it sound like you'd learn something from reading it. It's just kind of fun. It's just a nice little story. I mean, all right, you might accidentally learn something from it. There might be a few takeaway messages, but I don't want to detract from it. You know, it is just a nice kind of gentle romp through my life and how I got out the other side.
I love it. Okay, so let's talk about strategies. So, when you gave up alcohol, did you go cold turkey?
So, having since become a vegan, I would prefer to think of it as cold mango. But no, so did I go cold turkey? That's a really interesting question. So what I did could loosely be called cognitive reframing. So I took the beliefs that I had about alcohol and I examined them. I held them up to the light. I wondered whether they were true, whether they were serving me. Once I'd done that, I then used some sort of simple techniques to repoint my thinking, to change the way I thought. And using those two techniques, I stopped drinking and I didn't drink again. But I wouldn't really call it cold turkey as such, because that would seem to conjure up some idea of pain and suffering, and that wasn't really my experience. I stopped drinking and I was just really, really glad that I didn't have to do it anymore, because I'd got to that point where I no longer saw it providing me with anything, giving me any kind of benefit. So it was like a blessed relief to be
Oh,
allowed to
I'm
stop
so jealous.
drinking.
I'm so jealous. I went through the worst withdrawals, and only afterwards did I do the research and find out that it's not something you should do by yourself. Yeah, it's just, well, for me, it was a horror story. But I was, by the time I'd actually given up, I was at a point where my body was toxic. My thinking was toxic. My body was toxic. And, God only knows if I hadn't given up where I would actually end up today. Wow. Okay. So I'm jealous that yours was a blissful experience. Mine was far from that. The bliss for me didn't happen until way after, when I was out of the divine will space of just using just willpower to hold it together and had physically healed, that I was. But that even my journaling made sense, because if I look back at my journals through that process, they don't even make sense. Some of it's not even in English, and I don't even know what language it is. But I was not okay. I think my body was here, the rest of me was obviously elsewhere. Yeah, wow. Okay. So I'm very jealous. And if you could just give us the formula of how you could do that, I reckon the rest of the world could give up alcohol as well. Is this in one of your other books?
I mean, that's at the heart of Real Men Quit. I mean, look, I'd love to claim to have invented cognitive reframing, but it's not really my thing. I mean, it's officially a subsect of cognitive behavior therapy, but I don't most of CBT I don't think is really useful for people drinking alcohol. So I don't kind of want to point you in that direction. If you want to think, read the works of the people that influenced me, and I think influenced that area in particular, Jack Trimpe, Alan Carr, and more recently Annie Grace, who built a lot on Alan Carr's work.
I love it. And so, do you find, is that what you do as part of your therapy?
So I work with a lot of different types of people. I work with smokers and drinkers, but I'm also starting more and more to work with vaguely normal people. It's a bit strange. Working on helping them to break their bad habits and build better habits. And it all comes from this simple idea that our results are driven by our behaviors. Everybody gets that. Everybody understands that. They just don't understand what our behaviors are driven by. It's beliefs. That's primarily what drives your behaviors. So once you get your beliefs straight, you might need a few kind of tricks and tips to help you kind of like guide the thought process, but once you've got the behaviors right, then once you've got the beliefs right, then the behaviors tend to follow naturally.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. When I re-entered society, and which took a little while, I found that I missed the social interaction of having a drink. So I would try and find fun drinks to drink that were, you know, didn't have a lot of sugar, because I was also going keto as well. Let's just lay everything on. And I really struggled to find a lot of non-alcoholic alternatives that were fun. We didn't have a lot of mocktails 10 years ago. We do now. And interestingly enough, only now in Australia are we starting to see the better restaurants, the better hotels actually even offer non-alcoholic substitutes. So now in Australia, pretty much everywhere you go, there's a non-alcoholic beer, and some places have up to three different choices. But wine, champagne, they're coming in as a trend. So I can see a change in the last 10 years, and hopefully moving forward there'll be other alternatives, because we live in an environment here in Australia where everything is set up around alcohol and food. So every event is around about alcohol. Even our cards have got alcohol on them when we're celebrating something. Like, it's how we celebrate everything in Australia.
Yeah, no, I know the birthday cards you mean, the ones that basically wish you have a happy birthday. I hope you get drunk and fall in a skip. I mean, it's like such an odd sentiment when you really get down to it, isn't it? It's like, why did you do that? Why would you wish somebody, I hope you have a really horrid hangover.
It would probably be a better deterrent. But, you know, there's generally bottles of champagne or glasses, and like, it's part of the Australian culture. It's very much embedded, and we see it more with teenagers too here in Australia, that it's seen as the grown-up thing to do. We probably let our kids drink too early. We let them drink at home, and then, yeah, we've got problems with children and alcohol here in Australia, and a lot of the drinks are almost designed for kids. You know, they're very kiddy, very sweet. We've got a long way to go here in Australia, but we're sort of slowly crawling in the right direction.
I think many of the things that you've just spoken about, you know, they apply equally in the UK. They apply in parts of America. I mean there are parts of America where drinking is less a part of the culture, but there are parts of America where it is just as bad. And I mean, when you talk about young people, I think that's the area we really need to work hardest on. And, you know, doing a little bit of input in schools, it helps and everything, but it's nowhere near enough. We need to change the entire focus of the way we do things. So when my daughter was a lot younger, she got invited to a friend's birthday party. And as I was dropping her off, the mum said, oh, you can leave her, or you can come in and have a glass of champagne. All the grown-ups are having a nice glass of champagne. And it's like, yeah, great. So what are we actually teaching our children here? You know, if you want to be grown up, the way to be grown up and the way to celebrate as a grown up is by drinking alcohol. That's effectively what you're teaching them at. They were like three or four. You know, it's like, it's ridiculous. We need to sort of show people that there is another way. We need to show young people that you actually can enjoy yourself without alcohol. And that is one of the good things about the vast majority of these kind of alcohol substitutes that are coming in. There are grown-up drinks that don't have alcohol in them. And that, I don't think that was true sort of like, you know, 9 years ago when you stopped drinking, when I stopped drinking. It was like, what do you want? You know, you can have Coke, or you can maybe have a glass of squash, but it's just like not really a great opportunity, great selection. So the fact that, you know, there are more proper grown-up drinks available, I think that is a good thing. But, you know, as a culture, look, children will ignore everything you say and copy everything you do. So if we continue to drink ourselves stupid, then don't be surprised that your kids do.
Yep, and I absolutely hear you. We went to My husband and I went to on date night on the weekend, and we went to a beautiful restaurant in the Clarin Vale, which is a wine district. And the last time we ate there, I made a bit of a fuss to the waitress, saying, "I'm really disappointed. This is like a top class restaurant. We love it here, but you never have any non-alcoholic substitutes." Well, it must be 6 months down the track, and we've come back again. And she said, "I remember you. I spoke to my boss, and we've got some non-alcoholic wine." And and it was actually a really beautiful wine. So I bought the bottle, as you do. Old habits die hard. And it was just nice to be able to sip champagne while my husband was drinking and we were eating a beautiful dinner. So it's nice that they are listening, but it's a little bit late in the piece.
Yeah.
58 years old, and they could have started this years ago. So hopefully for the
Yeah,
next,
I mean,
I have it
to
sorted.
be fair, I think it's a bit harder with wine. That's why you don't see as many decent alcohol-free wines as beer. Beer is relatively easy to, and like honestly, I had some the other day and I was like, this is nice. Although, to be honest with you, it's been so long since I've drunk beer. I don't know whether this is actually what beer tasted like, but I don't care because it tastes nice. Whereas wine, often does taste quite nasty. If you just make the wine and then de-alcoholize it, that tends to make it taste a bit awful. In fact, my favorite alcohol-free wine isn't wine. It's at first flush Darjeeling tea that they make slightly fizzy. And it's a really passable champagne. I was drinking some at a party the other day and I thought I'd picked up the wrong glass. I thought I was actually drinking champagne. So yeah, that's pretty good. But
Might as
again,
well be
it's
drinking
actually not
kombucha,
wine.
Duncan. You might as well be drinking kombucha.
Yeah, well, if it tastes nice, I don't care what it is.
Love it. I love it. Like, if you look at it from the perspective, so I'm a vegetarian and you're a vegan, is like we don't go out of our way to eat anything that sort of resembles meat. Like, it was sort of. I think that's very hilarious that they make vegan bacon and all the rest of it. Like, that's the reason why we're not eating it. We don't want to imagine a dead animal. And sorry for any of the listeners that eat meat, but it's not what we want to do. But it's funny how with alcohol, though, it's different. I want to have an experience that's similar to what I used to have, but without the alcohol. I want to have the same flavor. I want to have the sense of the nice crystal glass and the sense of celebration. I want to have all of that, but I don't want the alcohol with it. So hopefully, moving forward, this is something they'll come up with. Surely, if they've got bots that can speak to us like humans, and you can't tell if it's a human or a bot, come on, they can make alcohol that doesn't have any alcohol in it.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm quite lucky that I think I watched too many Perrier adverts when I was a kid. So I think that sparkling water is just the most sophisticated thing in the world. And I am kind of quite happy with a glass of sparkling water. So I'm kind of lucky in that sense. But no, I mean, we've got a great alcohol-free bar in Manchester that I've been to a few times. Love from run by a wonderful guy called Carl. And like it was just like, I'll go on, Duncan, have a cocktail. And I'm just like, all right, whatevs. I'll have a cocktail. It was amazing.
I love it.
I was like, all right, if this was more readily available, I would drink it more. I would forgo my sparkling water.
Yes, I absolutely. So recently we went on a catamaran for a girlfriend's 40th, and all of the cocktails were non-alcoholic. So she's a yoga instructor and very healthy. And so everyone was drinking cocktails, but they were all non-alcoholic. So that, like, we can do these things. We can create environments where it doesn't have to be. And the great thing was, we were on a boat out in the middle of nowhere. There was no going to find alcohol. So everyone was given that opportunity to be sober. But I was just listening to the comments of some of the people. And yeah, we're living in a culture where it's an expectation that you can just always get alcohol.
Yeah. I mean, I think that what we are seeing in this country certainly is there is a bit of a shift in the way business is done. Less and less employees actually want to go to socials that revolve around alcohol. Many of them will probably still drink. They just don't want to do their business socializing around alcohol. And that's, it's the statistics vary, but It's something like just over 40% of people actively don't want alcohol at business events. And actually, it's in the mid-20s, the percentage of people that actively do want it. So it's less and less people want that. And that's good because what that means is we're seeing more social events that aren't driven around alcohol. We're seeing more people actually having fun at these social events. And actually, what they're starting to learn is that you can have a good time without alcohol. The sad thing is that sometimes people will go to quite a big effort. They'll put on a nice kind of mocktail thing. And then somebody quite senior in the organization will come along because they feel they ought to kind of press the flesh. And they'll go, "Oh, this would be so much better if you stuck some vodka in it." And it's just like, "Oh, it would be so much better if you could think of an original joke." And you know, it just kind of like ruins the mood. And that is a bit sad because, you know, these people were all enjoying themselves and having a lot of fun until you turned up. And it's only you that is the one with the problem. So I mean, I am optimistic. I think we are the foamy bit of a breaking wave. I think things are changing. I think in 20 years' time, we'll look at alcohol the same way that we look at smoking now. And you know, in an ideal world, we'll look at vaping in the same way. But
I love it. It's so
that's
true.
another one of my hobby horses.
So for listeners, look, you might be in a space in your life where you're able just to have a glass here or a glass there. That we're not talking about those people. I was a five bottle a day. You were, five, three bottles a day. Like we were consuming and it was ruining our lives. So if they've got people in your proximity that have got a challenge, can you have a conversation with them? Can you point them in the right direction? Or at the very least, can you reach out and get some help? So in Australia, we've got Al-Anon. So that's for families of alcoholics. So, there's pl you can get yourself healed even if you're not in a position to point your loved one in the right direction. Yeah, I love it. This has been fantastic. Look, I'm not a bloke, but I do have some men in my surroundings that would do quite well with reading your book, Real Men Quit. I think that's fabulous. And in Australia, we have a saying, real men don't eat quiche. So it's quite which is just like a egg pie, really. So same thing. I love it. So look, just in closing today, because we could chat forever, what would be your words of wisdom to our listeners?
Look, you know, we hear so many messages about alcohol. We see it advertised. We see it on birthday cards. We see it at social events. We see our role models drinking. We see it on television, streaming services, films. We hear so many messages about how important it is to help you deal with stress and to be creative and to socialize and all of these things. But you know, the truth is that what you enjoy about socializing is the people that you're with. The way that you handle stress is by being yourself. And you're not like Ernest Hemingway wasn't creative because he drank a lot. He was creative because he was creative. In fact, it probably got in the way. He would have lived longer if he hadn't have drunk so much, and he would have written some more stuff. So, you know, you've got to kind of like question what you see about alcohol. Ask yourself whether it is really, really true, whether it is really serving you. And, you know, 99 out of 99 times, you're going to find it isn't. And there is another way. You know, there are a lot of people that have come out the other side. You know, I just have to go onto Instagram these days. It's full of sober influencers. So find out about them. Find out what they did. You know, get yourself educated. Read some books. Listen to some podcasts. There is absolutely another way.
I love it. I love it. I love it. As a recovered alcoholic, I think all of these are words of wisdom. Thank you for sharing this. And for our listeners, the links to the books will be in the show notes and also the show descriptions, and also Duncan's links to all of his other assets as well will be there. And it's exciting for you to dive in. It's been a privilege and a pleasure, Duncan, to have this conversation. And I look forward to having another one with you soon. Take care. Bye for now.
Thanks very much. Have a great day.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of Healing Through Love. You can get further resources, see the show notes, or simply reach out to us via our website at htlaustralia.org. Thanks so much for joining us, and we look forward to your company next time on the Healing Through Love podcast.